towers of Erisosis after an hour of flight, implying it was as little as 30 miles away. But he expected it would be 6 hours until their arrival. The city still bore evidence of the attack led by the Lesser Lich the week previously. The outlying crops had been torn down and burned, and some of the house raft neighborhoods had been scattered. Like a furrow left by a great plow, a trail of ash and devastation marked the pathway the Lesser Lich and his army of Blighted had carved across the islands on their way to the city's core. There, the towers of two islands had been knocked into rubble, broken stone jutting from the canals. Several other towers bore damage heavy enough to render them unstable. Repair efforts had been made at their bases, but these had clearly been suspended in the face of the second attack. Their efforts were now being spent to buttress the defenses. Erisosis featured a unique challenge in that regard. Each island was separated from its neighbors by a wide canal, and sported 2 to 5 towers, rendering them difficult to take through conventional means. However, this same separation meant that, if the neighboring islands could be taken, the defenders would be completely cut off, without any means to retreat. Furthermore, that lack of mobility meant that if the enemy could break a hole in the defenses, they could penetrate straight through to the citizen population. Not good news when the Lich could convert every captured citizen into a new member of his own army. To work with all these considerations, the people of Erisosis were stacking their defenses on a peninsula of islands that extended into the protected bay of the port. To fend against the Blighted, who could bypass the choke point by walking straight through the water, the defenders had piled up dirt and rubble into ramparts on the shores of the island. Wooden stakes thrust outward from the shorelines and the tops of the ramparts. Soldiers drilled in war canoes, maneuvering between the canals and the bay. Laborers extended the hasty earthworks. On the side of the peninsula facing away from the city and out to the ocean, a huge cluster of rafts and canoes bobbed in the gentle currents of the bay. If the defenses were overwhelmed, the people could, hypothetically, strike out to sea. But this struck Dante as a very desperate last resort. Few of the vessels were seaworthy, and he doubted there were enough to carry the thousands of people packed into the towers. Still, it looked like more than enough to deal with a monsoon. Dante ordered the Dragonfly to gain elevation and head east-northeast in the direction of the incoming rebels. In less than half an hour of flight, 12 miles perhaps, his scouts spotted the canoes slicing through the swamps. He lowered it through the canopy to skim over the length of the convoy. Once he was done reviewing their troops, which took longer than he was happy about, he pinged Jonah's loon. "I just got a look at the monsoon's ranks. Your scouts must have been observing with one eye closed, because I see closer to 4,000. "You'll have to pardon the men," Jonah said as mildly as ever. "They weren't expecting to see any armies at all, let alone one of them. The monsoon's traveling with some weird boats, too, bigger than you typically see in the swamps. It could be logistical, but I have a bad feeling it's siege equipment." "We're right about to enter the city, my lord. I'll pass your findings along. But I have a question, my lord."
"Yes?"
"If you can spy on them better than our own scouts, why weren't you doing so from the start?"
"My God, you're right, Jonah. Why didn't I think of that until right now?"
"This falls under the category of things I don't understand, doesn't it? Even the Nether has limits. Expect us in 4 hours. Until then, I'll be watching over you."
He sent another pair of dragonflies toward the city, leaving the first behind to follow the monsoon.
Two boring yet strenuous hours later, the monsoon still hadn't deviated course or broken pace. Dante loomed Jonah to expect an attack in as little as 20 minutes. Unlike most Tenarian cities, which were ringed by nothing more substantial than two sets of nets, Erisosis was enclosed by a stone wall, the same one Volo had smuggled Dante and Blaze through when they'd first come to Tanara Tain in search of Naren. Though the defenders were concentrating the bulk of their forces on the peninsula, they'd decided to make an initial stand at the wall, deploying 400 soldiers along it, archers mixed with a few spearmen. In the event they were overrun, a long road consisting of both docks and small islands ran directly into the heart of the city, providing a fast means of withdrawal. Other than the soldiers along the wall, the swampward reaches of the city had been emptied out except for a handful of runners. The waters of their canals were so still that Dante could see the ripples of fish breaching. As the first of the monsoon's canoes broke from the tree line, and into the clear outer ring of water on the north end of the city, one of the runners lit an arrow, tilted back his bow, and fired it into the air, leaving a thick band of reddish smoke in its wake. The man hopped into a canoe and paddled like mad toward the interior. The monsoon crossed the waters without resistance, a chevron of over 600 boats. Most were simple canoes, but one in eight were larger, double-hulled war canoes with a simple bridge, and one in 20 were wide, covered barges that resembled lumbering turtles. Rather than being oar-driven, they were propelled by a pair of objects that resembled mill wheels, one wheel affixed to either side of the hull. The exteriors had been painted black with red lines sectioning the design into plates, furthering the resemblance to a turtle, and seemed unusually shiny, as if they'd been lacquered. The armada came to a stop just outside of effective bow range. A lone war canoe detached from the mass. It bore the white flag with the two blue circles of the monsoon. Its captain climbed onto the top of the war canoe's bridge and made the typical demands for the city's defenders to lay down their arms and surrender. The defenders, aware that surrender, in this case, was shorthand for "wait for the lich to turn you all into raving blighted," responded with voluminous obscenities. The war canoe returned to its ranks. There was a short pause, as orders were relayed via shouting and semaphore. 10 of the turtle boats detached from the armada, wheels churning as they advanced ploddingly on the wall in a loose line. A score of canoes followed tightly in their wake. The defenders loosed arrows that struck the sloped hulls of the turtle boats without dealing any damage at all. Flames lit up along the wall. A hail of burning arrows arced through the air, half landing on the boats, while half sizzled into the water. Yet rather than flaring up and spreading to the hull, the oiled rags flickered dimly. The shiny surface of the boats had been applied to stymie this exact tactic. A monsoon officer bawled an order. Slots opened in the front and sides of the turtle boats. Arrows whisked forth, sending men toppling from the walls. The armored boats advanced inexorably, suffering not a single casualty, as they inflicted a dozen on the 400 soldiers holding the walls. A runner sprinted along the wall, handed a bundle of arrows to an archer, then ran on to deliver a second batch. The first archer knocked one of the new arrows, the tip of which bulged like a sack. As Dante realized it was a sack, and that he'd seen the monsoon deploy ones just like them before, the man loosed his missile. It had counterweights at the back to steady its heavy tip, and to compensate, the archer launched it in a steeper arc than the conventional arrows, lofting it into the air before it peaked and swooped down on the closest turtle boat. It struck the ship on the port side. Light flashed. Flame and smoke erupted from the boat, accompanied by a rolling boom. The ship stopped in its tracks. The wheel on its port side had been smashed to pieces and thrown across the water, the hull cracked and smoking. A second arrow flew wide of its mark, but a third landed square, blowing open the nose of a second boat. It foundered, water pouring inside. The surviving ships pressed hard forward, canoes darting from behind them to harry the defenders with arrows. A second contingent of turtle boats detached from the fleet to trundle after the first wave, but there was no need. Lacking more than a few of the explosive arrows, the defenders were only able to stop 3 of the first 10 vessels from reaching the walls. Arrows flew back and forth like hornets, but the defenders soon fell back. Hatches opened atop the turtle boats. As the first attackers raced up ladders to claim their portion of the wall, fellow soldiers scrambled from the canoes to follow them up top. A second wave of canoes was already on its way to reinforce them. Now that the monsoon had emerged from their shelters, they began to lose people as well. But they advanced steadily, pushing the Arisians back under a withering storm of arrows. Within a span of 15 minutes from when the monsoon had launched their attack, they'd driven the defenders to the center of the wall. The Arisians dashed down the steps to the long roadway, leading back into the city. Dante moved the closest of his dragonflies in for a better angle. As he did so, his connection to it snapped like a dry twig. His heart froze. He sent his second dragonfly on the scene, soaring higher, and pulsed Jonah's loon. Jonah answered with the crisp readiness he displayed while at sea.
"Yes, Lord?"
"Before you withdrew to the city, were you certain the White Lich was still with his army of Blighted?"
"Yes, sir."
"How certain?"
"Unless he's got friends, who are also 10 feet tall with skin as white as snow, and eyes of every shade of blue, I am extremely certain he was still there, Lord."
"You have to get the defenders off the bridge," Dante said. "The monsoon has brought..."
Darkness flashed from atop the wall, streaking over the heads of the Arisians and smashing into a section of dock ahead of them. The wooden planks exploded into splinters, cutting off the defenders' retreat. The monsoon charged forward, archers pelting the Arisians from atop the seized wall. The two sides clashed, corpses tumbling into the waters to both sides of the dock. After a minute of ferocious fighting, the beleaguered Arisians tried to drop back, but, constrained by the tightness of the road, their retreat degraded into a chaotic mass. The scrum pushed dozens into the water. As those at the front were gashed down by monsoon spears, other defenders leaped into the water, attempting to swim away. The canoes swooped in to scoop them from the water. The monsoon soldiers beat the prisoners into submission and carried them back to the fleet's reserves. Fresh recruits for the Blighted. Before the slaughter of the Arisians' front line of defense could be completed, the last 100 men surrendered.
"You just lost a tenth of your people," Dante said through the still open loon. "And they've brought Nethermancers."
The monsoon had already cranked open the gates. Scores of canoes patrolled into the city, followed by the wallowing turtle boats.
"Do you have orders?" Jonah prompted.
"We're nearly there, but you have to delay them as much as possible. If they bring their Nethermancers to bear on the towers, they can topple your entire defense within minutes."
"We'll do as we can, sir."
The monsoon took several minutes to regroup, ferrying more captives to the back while the turtle ships moved to the front. As soon as they renewed their advance, small teams of defenders popped up on both sides of the canal,
and fired a volley of arrows from their compact Tenarian bows. As soon as the arrows were in flight, they turned and ran, scampering across the narrow stone bridges leading to the next islands. The enemy's return fire landed on empty ground. The city's islands and bridges, so quiet before, erupted into activity. While archers harried the monsoon's advance, including with the occasional explosive arrow, teams assembled further down the canal to dump barrels, furniture, and anything else that would float into the waters. Others pulled rafts together to clog the way forward. With the monsoon slowed to a crawl, Erisians rushed from the south to seize the choke points, provoking hot spots of gruesome urban warfare. Inflicting heavy losses on the monsoon, the defenders might have been able to hold these positions for hours, if not indefinitely. But each time the advance stalled out, shadows streaked from the monsoon nethermancers, murdering the defenders a dozen at a time. Each minute gained was to be celebrated, but the outcome was inevitable. With Dante and the others still 4 miles from the city, the Erisians withdrew their battered squadrons to the crescent of islands that marked the entrance to the peninsula. Their last defense. The monsoon regrouped again, sending scouts into the islands surrounding the point of entrance. Soldiers in white uniforms gathered across from the outermost of the defended towers. Arrows jabbed back and forth. A ball of nether looped from behind a short tower and crashed into the base of the defender's outpost. It was followed by a second. Chunks of stone spun through the air. Erisians sallied from the tower, presumably so that they wouldn't fall to their dooms when it was knocked down, and took cover behind whatever they could find. A few flung themselves into the water, followed by a trickle of them, and then a stream. A fourth ball of nether rocked the tower, making it lean like a man trying to see the soles of his boots without lifting his feet. The sixth sent it crashing down. Stone blocks slammed into the water, jetting spray dozens of feet into the air. Other parts landed on the island with rattling thuds. Dust spewed inland, aloft on the coastal breeze. As it settled, a woman emerged from the monsoon-held island. She wore a jibbat long enough to be a dress, the white cloth emblazoned with circles of 2 different shades of blue. She looked on her work and smiled. 3 canoes shot from around the island where the tower had fallen, fighting their way through the still choppy waters. They loosed arrows, but the turbulence sent the missiles flying wide of the sorcerer. She snarled and summoned 2 gobs of shadows to her hands. She thrust forth her palms at the oncoming boats. Before she could deliver it, the nether dropped from her hands as if it had died. She blinked in surprise. A man in gleaming black scale armor arose from the neighboring island. He drew a long sword, the blade crackling purple as he pointed it at the sorcerer. "Death to the defiler! Death to the servant of the Aedan Rane!" The monsoon's archers fired on the canoes and the revealed knight of Odo Sain. But the defenders' boats rushed onward, joined by others. The sorcerer turned and ran. An arrow pierced her right shoulder. She dropped, struggling to get up. The Erisians made landfall, hurling spears at the nethermancer, ignoring the incoming arrows even as the soldiers around them fell bleeding. As a monsoon soldier helped the woman to her feet, a spear lanced through her chest, slamming her to the ground. "What," Dante said, "is the knight doing in the middle of the battle?" "I'd no choice, lord," Jonah said. "You said yourself that if the sorcerers brought their might against the towers, all the city was doomed." "Okay,
extreme circumstances and all, but why is he wearing his armor? And you can see that sword from Malin. He's too obvious a target. At least show some sense. Would you like me to?
Jonah cut off mid-sentence. The ambient noise from his side was gone too. After a moment of shock, Dante understood. Absorbed by the events of the battle, he'd left the loon open all the while. It had used the last of the nether bonding the two pieces together, and was now dead for good.
Swearing violently, he tore the loon from his ear and hurled it into the swamp. He watched through the dragonfly as a pitched battle erupted between the two contested islands. The Odosain attempted to withdraw, but a new blast of shadows forced him to remain at the island's edge. He raised his shield, deflecting an arrow. Dante's last dragonfly went dark, struck down by a monsoon sorcerer, or possibly by the Odosain, knocking down every scrap of nether in the area. He cursed again, startling a possum hanging from a tree. Acutely aware that it was chipping away at his reserve of shadows, he killed and reanimated a single passing dragonfly, sending it whirring toward the city. With Blaze and Volo paddling as hard as they could, Dante recapped everything he'd seen, briefing them on what they could hope to expect.
"It will be our job to neutralize any remaining nethermancers. If they're removed from the picture, the Arisians are more than capable of holding off the soldiers. Volo, is there another way into the city besides the front gates?"
She shook her head, black hair swaying.
"Nope. Not that they ever told me."
"The monsoon's still got a reserve force outside the gates. We'll need a disguise to get past them."
Gladik made a murmuring noise.
"And if they see through it?"
"Then we'll need a crew of frighteningly effective murderers. Does anyone know where we can find such a thing?"
Blaze blinked sweat from his eyes.
"Sure, we could disguise ourselves as fellow monsooners who just happened to fall behind, and who totally shouldn't need to answer any questions about that, and definitely shouldn't be punished for it. Or you could just open a hole in the wall for us to sail through."
"I've a better idea. We do exactly what you just said."
Volo corrected course to bring them toward the western arm of the wall, closest to where the battle for the peninsula was unfolding. Dante's dragonfly arrived at the city 2 minutes later. He sent it hundreds of feet into the air, too high to draw notice from enemy nethermancers, or get caught up in the Odosain's sphere of negation. The western wall was quiet, but a massive brawl was ongoing at the entrance to the peninsula. There, a second tower had fallen into the canal, forming an uneven bridge between two islands. Arrows zipped about, though less heavily than before. Both sides were running low, resulting in clashes of spearmen battling for control of the bridge of rubble. On the water, squadrons of canoes hurtled toward each other, soldiers stabbing out as their boats clipped past each other. Nether flickered on the eastern fringe, slaying a team of Arisian archers who'd been punishing any monsoon canoe that tried to enter the canal there. To the west and center, there was no sign of sorcery. At that very moment, the Knight of Odosain, obvious in his demonic black armor, charged toward the eastern flank. Before their canoe, the trees thinned, then vanished. They were spat into the brackish waters surrounding Erisosis. Three monsoon canoes were stationed near the wall, a half mile to the north, but if they took any notice of Vola's canoe, they didn't show it. They skimmed toward the looming wall. A pair of Erisian sentries stood from their posts, drawing bows.
"Stay back or be fired upon!"
"We're friends," Blaze hollered. "Trust me, you really like us."
"I said stay where you are."
Volo glanced at Dante in confusion, still paddling. On the wall,
The sentries sighted down their arrows. Gladick flicked his left hand. White light shot toward the wall. Both men fell from sight. Blaze gawked.
Did you just kill them?
They were about to attempt to do the same to us, Gladick said. However, as a man of superior morals, I did not stoop to their level. I merely disabled them.
They rushed toward the wall, the wind whooshing over their faces. As they neared, Dante nicked his arm, then reached into the stone barrier. He softened it and drew it back, opening a hole there, one that, in the interest of preserving shadows, only ran a foot below the waterline, and was a mere 3 feet in width and height.
"Floating shit!" Volo squeaked. "We'll be smashed!"
She pulled in her paddle. Everyone ducked. They shot through the passage without a scrape. Volo laughed wildly, paddling hard. Dante guided her east, keeping two rows of islands between themselves and the fighting. Bodies bobbed everywhere, along with splintered wood, obliging Volo to weave through the flotsam like a shuttle on the loom. Dante lowered his dragonfly closer to the eastern fighting. It was such a mess of tussling bodies that his search felt hopeless. Yet he spotted Naren and Jonah in moments, their foreign dress and features standing out from the Tenarians like a stain on a clean shirt. They stood on the southern face of an island connected to its northern neighbor by an arched stone bridge. At that moment, the Knight of Odo-Sain stood on the southern foot of the bridge, rallying the defenders to retake control from the monsoon. At a glance, 500 soldiers were involved in the melee for the two islands, with reinforcements pouring in from both sides. Volo slipped into a canal, only to find the approach to the southern island blocked by an irregular line of stone rubble and shattered rafts. She craned her neck, hunting for a way around it. Dante shook his head.
Faster for us to continue on foot. Volo, stay here with the canoe.
She tipped back her chin.
But I can help you.
If the flank collapses, we'll need to get out of here in a hurry. Watch the boat and stay ready to go.
Sparing no more time for her arguments, he climbed out onto the broken rock of a fallen tower. Blaze jogged behind him, not yet drawing his Odo-Sain swords. Gladick brought up the rear. Spotting them, Jonah lifted his hand. Dante ran to meet them. Naren grinned, clasping his hand.
I wasn't sure that I would see you again.
His gaze moved to Gladick.
In your case, I hoped that I wouldn't. We can resume internal hostilities after we've finished the external ones, Dante said. Right now, our job is to get the Odo-Sain off the front lines.
Naren drew him close and lowered his voice. The man in the armor is not the same man who earned it. He's merely a decoy, and a highly effective one at that. The monsoon is throwing away countless lives in their effort to kill him.
You dressed a soldier in the knight's armor. What happens when a Nethermancer comes for him and he can't stop them?
The true Odo-Sain remains close enough to neutralize their sorcery.
That, Dante said,
is extraordinarily clever. He took a moment to absorb the scene. The false knight was providing a rallying point for the defenders, but he was also hanging behind the front lines. If a Nethermancer came at him, it would be at grave personal risk. Dante was tempted to wade in and start blasting the monsoon to shreds, but with their Nethermancers neutralized, they seemed to be doing a pretty good job shredding themselves against the city's defenders.
I say we watch and wait, he said. There might not be any call to reveal ourselves today. For now, our single priority is to keep the real knight safe. Where is he?
Secure on the previous island we seized.
Naren turned to the west and nodded to the glob of land on the other side of the rubble they'd crossed on the way in.
His eyes flew wide.
Mother of storms!
That island, Blaze pointed. The one in the process of being completely overrun by the monsoon?
Neren nodded, stone-faced. On the southwest shore of the island, which was separated from them by a couple hundred feet of open water, and most of the island itself, a horde of white-uniformed monsoon were cutting their way through the Erisians, pushing toward a pillar of a man dressed in lacquer armor and laying about himself with a stout spear and a tall rectangular shield. Cut off from the shore, the knight of Odosain bellowed for aid.
To him! Dante took off at a run. To the knight!
He sprinted toward the debris, calling the nether to his hands. Before he could release it, the power of the Odosain clamped down on him. Hopping onto the broken rubble, he yelled to the knight, but the man was fighting for his life, lost in the helter-skelter of weapons and armor colliding, and soldiers screaming in rage and pain. Dante retreated past the spot where the power had afflicted him, but the nether remained inert. Gladick cursed, the cords of his neck straining against his wrinkled skin as he fought to bring either the shadows or light to bear. Blaze ran ahead of them toward the canoe, skidding to a halt on the pebble-strewn rubble, staring at the spot where they'd left Volo. The canoe was gone. Almost halfway to the other island, Volo paddled with everything she had, meaning to snatch the Odosain up and ferry him away to safety. Dante made his way to the edge of the debris field, standing on a column of broken tower. Naren waved his hands over his head and yelled to a friendly canoe past the southern end of the rubble, convincing them to swing about. On the western island, most of the Odosain's fellow soldiers had been knocked to the ground to bleed away their last. Catching a glimpse of Volo's canoe streaming toward him, the knight lashed about with redoubled vigor, fighting his way toward the shoreline. Volo cruised onward, reaching the shallows where reeds and grass grew. Around and behind her, dark shapes broke the surface of the water. At first, their rounded tops resembled the backs of an army of turtles, but they continued to rise, the shapes flaring out like hideous pale mushrooms. Shoulders and arms emerged from the depths. With their upper bodies freed from the water, the blighted stampeded toward the island. Volo froze, retracting her paddle from the water. The wake of the blighted's frenzied charge rocked her side to side. They ignored her for the moment, bent on the destruction of the Odosain. Seeing their gnashing faces, the knight pushed his way back up the slope, enemy spears knocking against his broadshield. The first row of blighted hauled themselves to dry ground. Dante cupped his hands to his mouth.
Drop the Odosain! Drop it now, for the love of the Silent Spires!
Unhearing, the knight tried to bull his way onward. A spear slipped around his shield and pierced his right side. He fell to one knee, planting his spear hand in the muck. Two blighted flung themselves at him from behind, yanking at his armor to expose his back and sinking their teeth into his skin. The nether unlocked. In the blink of an eye, Gladick punched his hand forward. A sheet of ether streaked away from him, expanding as it went, until the glare on the water was so bright Dante had to shield his eyes. The ether sliced into the backs of the rearmost blighted, exploding more dazzlingly than the Tenarian's special arrows. Dante blinked, clearing the spots from his eyes. Dozens of half-corpses sloshed about in the water, cut across the hips, gut, or ribs, depending on how far each blighted had managed to climb from the water before being hit by the light. There was no sign of Volo. Her canoe bumped into a torso, stopping 10 feet from the island. On the island, the blighted lay dead. So did many of the monsoon soldiers. But the knight of Odosain stirred, pulling himself away from the remainder. His shield arm dragged behind him, broken.
"Did you kill her?" Blaze said. "Did you kill Volo?"
Gladick worked his throat. Before he could answer, Nether forked from the island they'd left behind, ploughing into the Erisians at the center of the bridge and toppling them into the water.
"Save the knight," Gladick barked at Dante. "I will wreak our hell on those who wage war on the world."
The canoe Naren had hailed swung up to the ruins. Dante rolled over the gunwale, accompanied by Naren and Jonah. The oarsmen shoved off toward the western island. There, a few of the surviving monsoon soldiers were shaking off their daze. As they moved to pick up their dropped spears, Dante brought the Nether to him. The triumph of its presence felt like standing from bed after a long illness. He drew it into killing bolts, hurling them over the water. The monsoon soldiers converging on the wounded Odosain didn't so much as look up as the shadows punched through their torsos in cloudbursts of blood. Dante sent a second volley behind the first, aiming them at a squadron of monsoon charging in from the ruins. Seeking the black missiles, the soldiers scattered, throwing themselves toward cover. Dante guided the Nether after them, ripping through their skulls and ribs. Later, the joy of the wrath he felt at finally being able to act would be shameful. For now, it burned inside him like sweet liquor. Behind him, men screamed. People had been screaming for some time now, but this was something new. The shrieks of people seeing a death far worse than they'd imagined would take them. On the southern of the two contested islands, a pair of Andrak loped toward the bridge, twice the height of a man, long claws extended from their sides. The Erisians scrambled away as well, tripping over rocks. Sometimes they dropped their weapons and left them behind. The monsoon soldiers who'd taken the bridge shook off their paralysis and turned to run. Too late. The two Andrak overtook them in great bounds, slashing them into thick slabs of meat. Naren grabbed the gunwale.
"I feel sickened."
"I possess a simple solution," Dante said. "Quit looking."
"That is my paradox. I don't want to look away. The deaths of these traitors to humanity gives me more pleasure than starting or ending a long voyage."
"If you expect me to say that such feelings don't reflect your true self or something else meant to reassure you of your basic civility, you're going to be disappointed. We're not a very good species, Naren. We're violent, and we want to see our enemies fall. In good times, we can pretend to be better than that, but good times rarely last for long." The Andrak continued their wholesale slaughter of the monsoon. Nether flickered from the North Island, crashing into the bridge. It gave way with a groan and clack of rock, landing with thunderous gouts of water. The two demons dumped into the canal with it. Blaze, a purple sword snapping in each hand, sprinted past the ruins and vaulted far over the canal separating the two islands. As he cleared the apex of his jump, he disappeared from sight. There was no splash. A pale torso spun in the current to Dante's right. He turned about, scanning the waters, as the canoe passed through the bobbing carcasses. They passed Volo's black boat, which was dinged up but intact. It was empty. The canoe scraped to a soft halt in the grass and mud at the edge of the island. Dante threw himself out, sandals squelching. Naren leaped out behind him. To Dante's right, a slim body lay on the shore. Volo's eyes were closed, and her soaked hair clung to the side of her face. Her blood had trickled into the silt, and he couldn't tell at a glance whether she was alive. He hesitated, aware that Naren was staring at him, then ran on
toward the Knight of Odosain. The man lay on his belly. His left arm was bent at the forearm, broken by his own shield when the blast of ether had knocked him over. Yet he showed only a few surface burns of the bluish variety caused by hostile exposure to the light. Somehow, Gladik had managed to almost entirely avoid hitting the man with the ether straight on. Even so, where his lacquered armor had been ripped away, the man's ragged jabat was stained red. Blood leaked from spear wounds and bites deep enough to have torn away flesh. More than one looked potentially fatal. Though the bites were more viscerally disturbing, Dante homed in on the nastiest of the spear wounds, a deep slit on his upper chest that had likely punctured a lung. Nether poured from his hands into the wound, sinking into its depths and sealing severed tissue back together. Pink, bubbly blood, the sign of lung trauma, though the nether had already confirmed that for Dante, was forced outward, dribbling down the man's chest like a clutch of frog's eggs. As soon as that wound was treated, he moved to the next. Naren stood between him and the top of a low hill, wary for another attack. Dante finished the second wound and shifted to the third, a jab to the liver that would have killed the man in 20 minutes. The knight gasped, eyes popping open.
"Warlock!"
He grabbed the front of Dante's jabat. Golden sparks lit the man's face, spinning in tight patterns around his hands. The nether slammed closed.
"Let me go! You stop it with the Odosain! I'm trying to help you, you ass-brained moron!"
The man struggled to drag himself away. As he planted the palm of his broken arm against the ground, he gasped again. His eyes rolled back, face paling to nearly the same shade as the Aiden Rani. He collapsed. The knight's power fell away, releasing the nether. Muttering curses, Dante drew the shadows back to him. The remaining stab wounds didn't look overly serious, so he turned to the bites taken from the flesh, which were gruesome and bleeding badly. Stilling his mind to an empty chamber, he waited for the ether to fill him, then directed it to the largest bite, which filled with a semi-opaque substance. It sealed over with new skin that was a perfect replacement of the old. With that single action depleting almost half of the ether he could bring to bear, Dante opted to reserve the rest for the time being, patching the other bites with nether. Not as elegant, and it might leave scarring. Dante was rushing it. But the man would live. That left a broken arm as the only serious wound. Sensing some serious triage in his future, Dante was tempted to leave it be. But with the white lich close enough to fall upon the city in as little as a day, they'd need the knight at full strength. Dante knitted his bones back together, then closed all but the most superficial of his remaining cuts. He shot to his feet and motioned to Naren. "Watch over him." Only then did he turn and sprint back to Volo, turf flying from his feet. She lay in the same position as when he'd first seen her. She was still alive, but had deep gouges in her back. The fringes of her skin blue with ether. The shallow angle of entry suggested she'd ducked as the light ripped over her, or even that she'd attempted to fling herself into the water. She had bites taken out of her too, mostly the arms and shoulders. One had also been inflicted on the right side of her jaw, the skin dangling in a flap. Dante placed the nether on the ethereal slices in her back. If you didn't know what you were doing, damage caused by ether could be hard to undo, but Dante had treated countless cases over the years. First, he used the nether to snuff out the light remaining in Volo's wounds, and only then closed them up.
He did the best he could to smooth out the skin on her jaw without leaving any marks behind. With the other bites, he filled in the flesh and covered them with new skin, but did little to deal with the cosmetics. She would have scars, big and strange ones. But she'd be all right. He wasn't yet sure the same could be said of Eris Ossus. He got to his feet and looked around him for the first time in several minutes. There was some skirmishing going on to the northwest, but it looked to mostly be an interference action. The real battle was unfolding on the northern of the two islands Blaze and Gladick had gone to assault. There, shadows and light crashed together in storms of black and white motes. Men hurled spears back and forth. One of the Andrak was staggering back from the north shore, bleeding nether like a smoking chimney. For a moment, Dante was taken aback that the enemy had found a way to hurt the demon so quickly, yet it shouldn't have been much of a surprise. The demons had first been created in Tanara Tain. Its sorcerers would also know how to destroy them. The battle looked far from decided, and he itched to join it. Yet the first priority was to remove the knight from harm's way. Could send him deep into the peninsula, but he'd have to accompany them all the way to safeguard against ambushes, such as the one sprung by the Blighted. That would prevent him from joining the battle for at least 15 minutes. He took a quick look around, confirming there were no enemies nearby, then reached out to the nether on all sides. Didn't seem to be anything lurking or spying. He picked Volo up and slung her over his shoulder, grateful that the Tenarians were lightly built, and brought her over to a chunk of broken wall close to the knight. "Help me carry him." Dante grabbed the knight's feet while Neren took the shoulders. Dante guided them toward Volo and set the knight beside her. Neren set his hand on his hip. "Have you forgotten that the canoe is over there, in the water?" "No time." Dante sank the ground beneath the two wounded, hollowing out a pit, then liquefied the stone wall and drew it over them, concealing them within a space the size of a small room. He left an air hole open on one side, slanting it so no one could see or shoot into the space. "There. That should do it until we get back. And if you die in the field, then you'd better make sure you don't." Dante scratched an X in the dirt with his sandal. "You're a pirate, aren't you? This should be fun for you." "I am an honest merchant. I am only a pirate when a dishonest government declares me one." Dante was already running for the canoe. He got in and ordered the sailor to make for the southern shore of the northern island. The crewman slung out his lower jaw. "You mean the island being smashed to bits by sorcery and demons?" "Yes, that's the one. Just checking." The man shoved off, cutting across the waterway. Dante probed the nether beneath the surface, hunting for Blighted, but he didn't feel anything bigger than fish. To the north, two fleets of canoes rammed into each other, the sailors stabbing at each other with spears. Under normal circumstances, the peculiar naval action would have been exciting. On the northern island, however, the wounded Andrak had gone as translucent as mist. The nether in its body streamed toward the northern shore, gathering around the hands of a man dressed in a piece of clothing that was difficult to correctly identify, as it had recently been on fire. The nethermancer formed the shadows into slender spears and whipped them into the front line of the Erisian defenders. A low stone wall blew apart, 5 soldiers tumbling away in pieces. Gladick was watching the man from 40 yards away, light and darkness orbiting his left hand. Yet he did nothing as the enemy nethermancer lashed out at the Erisians a second time.
The half-burned man raised his hands high in anger, sucking the last of the nether from the dying Andrak, and fired it at Gladik in a shuddering wave. Gladik met it with a torrent of shadows and a column of light, hazing the field with black and white sparks. The air shimmered behind the Nethermancer. Two rods of light blazed in the air, purple and black. The figure holding them coalesced the next instant. Blaze drove one spear through the Nethermancer's back and the other into the base of his neck, then yanked the upper blade to the right and the lower one to the left. Then ethereal weapons shredded the man like wilted cabbage. Arrows zipped toward Blaze. He disappeared from sight. Gladik strode forward, spraying the nether into the monsoon archers. The canoe hit the shore. Dante vaulted over the prow and onto dry land with such skill, he was annoyed that Neren and the crewmen were the only ones to see it. He drew his Odosain blade, as did Neren, and ran up the low incline. With the Nethermancer dead, the Arisians stood and charged. They hammered into the monsoon lines with the clunk of spears on shields. Dante was 50 feet from the front lines when Blaze reappeared next to him, causing Dante to nearly dampen the front of his jabat.
"Did you find her?" Blaze said. "She's alive, but she's unconscious. She got hit hard."
"I saw. What about the knight?"
"Same with him."
"So everything's in order?"
"Hard as it is to believe, I'd say yes."
"Imagine that. Want to go to win a battle, then?"
They joined the front lines, laying about with their Odosain weapons while Gladik pounded the attackers with both darkness and light. In less than a minute, the monsoon began to fall back in an orderly retreat, taking to their canoes as others hunkered behind cover, loosing their remaining arrows to prevent the Arisians from overwhelming them. The surrendered field bore as many as 300 bodies, a mix of dead from both sides. Gladik struck out at the archers, only to be met by a wall of shadows cast from somewhere out in the water. At a command from an officer, half of the Arisian defenders got up and ran south. Dante was about to shout at them not to be cowards when he realized they were going for their own canoes. Gladik limped over to meet them, his face covered in sweat and ash.
"We should join the pursuit."
"Their monsoon is broken," Naren said. "The city has already lost more people than it can afford. Perhaps it's better to let them run."
"They have taken hundreds of captives. If we do not reclaim them, the next time we face the Lich, we'll be fighting them as blighted instead."
"The Arisians can't do this themselves," Blaze said. "Not as long as the monsoon's got another sorcerer out there."
He slammed his sword into its sheath.
"We're bringing the prisoners home."
He turned and ran for the boats. At the shore, Neren grabbed two paddles left behind there. The four of them piled into the canoe that had brought Dante and Neren to the island and joined the swarm of Arisian vessels giving chase to the monsoon. The three of them that still had two arms took up paddles and thrashed the water for all they were worth. Aided heavily by their crewman, who was fresh-armed while most of the others had recently been in battle, they slowly moved to the front of the chase. Watching the enemy fleet, Neren counted under his breath, stopping after 10 seconds.
"We're not gaining quickly enough. They're leading us away from our defenses and toward their reserves. If we extend ourselves all the way to the gates, they will rejoin the remainder of their force and smash us."
Dante had lost track of his dragonfly during the intensity of the healing and fighting. Discovering that it was still flying in slow circles over the southern portion of the city, he brought it speeding forward. Through its eyes, he scouted the route ahead. He tapped the sailor on the shoulder.
"Get us as close as you can. Gladik,
Watch for their nethermancer.
He sent a burst of nether into the crewman's muscles. The man grunted and paddled harder. They were outpacing the rest of the Erisians, entering the open gap of water between them and the monsoon. A few arrows sailed toward them, splooshing into the water. Gladick used a prong of ether to deflect one that appeared to be coming too close. The monsoon's armada had initially been strung out in a long line, but had condensed its formation on the move. They were presently streaming through a district of mixed islands and long public docks of merchant stalls. Dante watched closely as they skimmed past one of the docks and entered a watery square where two canals intersected. They paddled through it, entering a tight strait between two islands. He felt down through the water and into the ground beneath it. A hearty layer of silt rested on top of a bed of clay. Dante moved into the clay, drawing it upwards in a great sweep. It broke the surface of the strait and rose to a height of 4 feet, cutting off the fraction of monsoon vessels that had already cruised past it from the bulk of the boats behind them. Canoes rammed into the wall with hollow thuds. Others backpedaled hard, showering the air with spray. Officers yelled out contradicting orders. 1/3 of the fleet broke to starboard, while the larger portion swerved to port. Dante reached into the clay again, ready to block the monsoon a second time, but the city's defenders were already pouring into the intersection before the strait. They tore into the confused enemy before the monsoon could escape. The fight was short but brutal. Though the monsoon were fellow countrymen, some of whom, most likely, had even grown up in this very city, the Erisian showed them no quarter, skewering them on spears and stabbing them over and over, faces contorted with an anger as red-hot as that of the Blighted. The crime the defenders were punishing them for was much more than rebellion against an emperor. Instead, it was for the treason of selling themselves to a conqueror who would not only take the land, but consume its people. The handful of prisoners taken were beaten hard, tossed in the bottom of war canoes, and hauled off for interrogation. The Erisian captives were shuttled south toward the peninsula. The defenders regrouped and headed for the gates. Dante and the others accompanied them, but the monsoon had already departed north into the woods, taking with them hundreds of citizens and soldiers captured earlier in the fighting. A heated argument broke out between the defenders about whether to give chase. Dante turned their canoe about and directed them back through the damaged city to the rubble-strewn island where he'd left Volo and the Odoceine. Except for the dead, the island was deserted. Dante jogged to the smooth rock he'd shaped earlier. The nether was markedly slow to answer his call, lagging resentfully as he used it to open a passage in the side of the rock. Volo was still unconscious, breathing deeply and slowly, twitching with occasional shudders. The knight moaned as they picked him up and carried him to the canoe. Rather than climbing in with the others, Blaze got in Volo's black canoe, which had come to rest a short ways down the shore, and followed them to a tower made of bright orange bricks. They were greeted by a gray-haired woman named Kina, who thanked them so profusely for their aid that she didn't even remember to insult them for being foreigners. Dante asked for and was granted 3 rooms, including one that would serve as a hospital. Staff helped put Volo and the knight to bed. Dante observed the two of them for a few minutes,
using some of his dwindling supply of nether to heal 3 wounds that were worse than he'd initially assessed. Done, he sat back, feeling a headache come on.
Shall we retire to